everybody. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to the program tonight. Hope you had a good day. You know, I question many times on this program the effectiveness of street demonstrations. And on several occasions, I've also added that what made them effective back in the 60s was the fact that they were more or less student-led. And where are the students today? Well, believe it or not, Students for a Democratic Society has somehow reanimated itself and trying to become a force for peace where it concerns U.S. foreign policy. I've posted an 8-minute video at MikeMalloy.com that is taken from a demonstration in downtown Rochester, New York, yesterday. And I'd like you to take a look at it when you are so inclined. Dorothy in Reading, PA, sent this to me. But the statement from SDS bears repeating. On Wednesday, October 7th, 2009, Rochester Students for a Democratic Society, SDS, called for a protest against 8 years of war and occupation in Afghanistan. This protest was coordinated in conjunction with other chapters of SDS throughout the country as a national day of action. At 5:30 p.m., the march left from Washington Square Park and headed up to Main Street in downtown Rochester. At Main Street, the march headed west. At about 5:45 p.m., the peaceful march was disrupted by approximately 30 police cars. The police made their first arrest by wading through the group of protesters to pick out the only African-American student in the vicinity. This is a blatant example of racism and discrimination on the part of the Rochester Police Department. A press videographer who was taping the arrest was attacked by police, wrestled to the ground, and arrested. The police began to attack and arrest community members and students, nearly all of whom were standing on the sidewalk. The police shoved and hit people with clubs, used pepper spray, slammed people to the ground, and punched protesters. 12 people were arrested, at least 3 protesters sustained injuries, 2 were hospitalized and received stitches. Despite certain media reports of a protester throwing a drum at police, we are not aware of any action of this kind, and we strongly suspect the police fabricated the accusation to justify their egregious actions. The police claimed the alleged drum thrower was charged with, quote, obstructing governmental administration, end quote. Yet the only person charged with obstructing governmental administration was arrested while filming and did not have a drum. In addition, police also have claimed that they acted the way they did because protesters failed to let a fire truck through an intersection. This is not true, and video posted by Rochester Indy Media shows protesters backing onto the sidewalk and letting the fire truck through. And then there's an update from Mary A., who writes, our youth were attacked, and the escalation and ensuing police riot were, from what I saw, a direct result of the crowd explicitly calling out the racist police for nabbing immediately, instinctively, one of the only black students in this large crowd of protesters. Andy D. was attacked and taken to the ground for filming the arrest of the black student. And it goes on. Now you can go to my website and get the link, or you can go to rochester.indymedia.org. But I watched the video, and obviously there were college students, or maybe even some high school students there, young people who met at Washington Square Park, gave some speeches demanding an end to U.S. aggression, demanding that the troops be withdrawn from Afghanistan and Iraq. And then they began a march, a peaceful march, and they were attacked. You can look at the video and come to your own conclusions about what the police did in Rochester, New York. Now, the thing that was really scary to me, aside from the kind of sick feeling I got from watching the video, because it was very reminiscent of some of the stuff that I was involved in back in the 60s, late 60s, early 70s, and probably you too. I mean, a lot of people who listen to this program were active in the student movement, the anti-war movement, the movement for racial justice, movement for an end to nukes, movement for jobs with justice. There were so many movements back then, weren't there? Huh? The thing that is frightening is to read the comments. When you go to the video site that I've got linked at my website, after you watch the video, go down and read the comments. Some of which, from the citizens of Rochester, are what you would expect. Stuff like, you bastards deserve to be beaten. You know, the police weren't doing anything wrong. You were doing it wrong. You know, that here we go again. I could belittle, if I were inclined, which I'm not, the low number of protesters who took in, who were involved in this peaceful action. But that, you know, I mean, that would be asinine on my part. These are kids in Rochester, and I have every right to call them kids. Some of them appeared so young, I think I have food in my refrigerator older than some of these protesters. But there they were once again. I mean, you know, 80 years ago, 60 years ago, 40 years ago, 20 years ago. And here they are again. It's almost like, I mean, if you wanted to get real Kurt Vonnegut, it's almost like watching the same kids. Remember Billy Pilgrim, who kept sliding back and forth in time in Slaughterhouse-Five? One minute he was at the slaughterhouse where American soldiers were being held. The next moment he was attending a Rotary Club-like dinner someplace. The next moment he was on a plane that was crashing. The next moment he was on Tralfamador with, what was Wild Hack's first name? Montana Wild Hack. And I almost got the feeling watching this, you know, not to push the Slaughterhouse Five analogy too strongly or example too strongly, but that these kids somehow broke loose in 1968 and they've been sliding back and forth in time. It's the same kids. I had the feeling that I was looking at people that I marched with on several occasions here in the South, in Washington, D.C., in New York City. And it was like, hey, where you been, man? Of course, the odd part is I've aged 40 years and they haven't. There they are. Same kids. Same clothing. Same signs. Same speeches. Same fervent presentation of wanting their country to stop murder and mayhem. Wanting the same things. Jobs with justice. Affordable rents. No war, no imperialism, you know, respect for everybody in the community. There it is again. And watching that video, God, it was just bizarre. It was, you know, I wanted to get on the next plane and go to Rochester and find these kids and grab hold of them and say, do you remember me? You remember me? I used to walk with you. I used to carry signs with you. You remember? How in the hell did you guys break free and slide through time? How did this happen? I've gotten old. You are still young. What did you do that was so different from what I did? Just one of those surreal moments that everybody can experience, right? We'll be right back.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance.
of the Mike Boyd program is brought to you tonight by It's Up to Us Alone, featuring Ed Asner. Go to usalone.com for information on where to hear the debut of this dramatic new radio play in your area. We'll have a moment with Bob tonight, and Prairie 2 has sent us another one of his succinct missives. So stick around for that. And also, matter of fact, Prairie 2's demonstrations in a companion piece that I had planned on tonight anyway. Not Prairie 2, but Moment with Bob. We'll revisit the idea of the demonstrations. But if you get a chance, look at the video, the link to which I've got posted at MikeMolloy.com. This is just another in the series of poignant little moments that I like to bring to your attention. This is from Tacoma, Washington. It's reported by Cairo TV, K-I-R-O. The pastor of Fircrest's Liberty Baptist Church has pleaded guilty to making obscene phone calls to a female barista at a coffee stand near his church. Randy Brock, the preacher man, 41, entered the plea a couple of days ago. He was sentenced to 1 year in jail with the sentence suspended. He also was fined $300. A 21-year-old barista at Cafe Elite said day before yesterday, the calls went on for months. They were always from a man with a distinct southern accent. The barista said, and she did not want her name used, quote, after sexually explicit questions and questions about people wearing undergarments, there was heavy breathing involved in the phone call, end quote. Oh, my God. According to Fircrest Municipal Court records, Mr. Brock called Cafe Elite on September 25th, wanting to thank a barista for what he called a double deal. Asked what he meant, he answered, no bra, no panties. The barista hung up and hit 57, which alerts the phone company to trace the call. Or star 57. Oh, really? Star 57? That traces a call? Well, I'll be damned. Fircrest police were notified and tracked the number to Liberty Baptist Church. At first, the preacher lied. Wait a minute, there's something in the Bible about that. Brock told police he was not the one making the calls. Not me. Must have been that little devil over in the corner. But under questioning, he admitted making several harassing and obscene calls to Cafe Elite. He told the officer that the barista wore revealing clothing. And that was the reason he made the phone calls. Oh, by the way, he's the father of four little girls. And he declined to comment when contacted by KIRO-TV. Father of four little girls, huh? I wonder if it's going to be another Mackenzie Phillips story here. Obscene phone calls to a barista.
Hey, I want a double deal.
What's that, sir?
No bra, no panties.
Freaks. And then there's this. Well, we got a break here in a second, but do you remember a woman named Melanie Hain? She's from Lebanon, PA, and she got some national attention. When was it? Back about a year ago, when she went to her daughter's soccer game and carried a loaded gun, you know, exercising her Second Amendment rights. She had it in plain view and holstered on her hip and went to the soccer game September 11th, 2008, note the date, at Optimus Park in Lebanon. Her permit to carry a gun at that point was, well, shortly after, was revoked by the county sheriff. The sheriff said Ms. Haynes showed poor judgment in wearing her gun to the game. Now, Ms. Haynes' permit was reinstated by a county judge about a month later. But the judge asked her to conceal it at soccer games. Ms. Haynes said, she'd continued to carry openly because of her, by God, Second Amendment rights. Well, she then filed a lawsuit against the sheriff for $1 million in U.S. District Court seeking reimbursement of attorney's fees and costs, emotional distress, and lost wages. At the time, her attorney said, quote, she has been stigmatized unfairly. And at that point, the sheriff was offered free legal counsel by the Brady Center to prevent gun violence. A senior attorney for the Brady Center said at the time, quote, "This is a case that calls out for common sense. It's ridiculous to bring a gun to a child's soccer game," end quote. A hearing on Ms. Haynes' suit was postponed this past May after one of the attorneys in the case was involved in an auto accident. In an interview published with the newspaper, The Patriot News, that year, Ms. Haynes said, "I am happy being a gun owner." She said she had no intention of changing her views on gun ownership. She acknowledged the publicity had affected her life. She said in the interview, quote, "I've read all sorts of slander, personal attacks, and even threats toward me, my family, and yes, some specific to my children." Okay. I'll give you the follow-up to the story when we come back. You've already figured it out, haven't you? Before the hour. So, Melanie Hain, the pistol-packing mama who went to, with her gun on her hip, holstered Plainview soccer game a year ago in Lebanon, PA, and had her permit revoked by the county sheriff because he said she was acting like a doofus and taking a loaded pistol to a soccer game. She got her license, her permit back, and then sued the sheriff. About her decision to sue the sheriff, Ms. Haynes said at the time she did it because she was wronged. She said, quote, "Just the fact that he was wrong is evidenced by the fact that my license was restored to me. I am a victim of Sheriff Michael DeLeo's. I am a victim of those in society as a direct result of his actions as well. The way people look at me sometimes when I am out running errands, I feel as if I'm wearing a scarlet letter, and really it's just a Glock 26. Melanie Hain was shot to death yesterday by her husband in an apparent murder-suicide. Hain and her husband were pronounced dead by Lebanon County Coroner Dr. Jeffrey Yoakum shortly after 8:30 p.m. at their home. The couple's three children were home at the time and were not injured. They're now staying with relatives and friends, police said. A neighbor said Melanie, Miss Hain, babysat his three-year-old son and that she and Scott had been having marital problems for the last week. Scott went off on Tuesday and Melanie did not know where he went, but he came back Wednesday, the neighbor said. Melanie Hain either murdered her husband and he committed suicide, or Melanie Hain's husband murdered her and he committed suicide. I got several emails today about the comments I made about Keith Olbermann's hour-long special comment list last night, where he very clearly and emotionally and pointedly endorsed healthcare reform. And he used the best way to do it. He told us a story. The story was about his own family, among other things. Don Hewitt, who recently died, the longtime producer and executive producer of 60 Minutes, had a formula for producing good television. His directive to his reporters and producers was simply, tell me a story. Anyone who understands broadcast understands the importance of telling a story. That's one of the reasons why on so many nights I'll share with you something that Bob Alexander has written, or Bridget Wolf, or who else? Kay Petrini. Prairie twos are a little bit too short to be stories. They're more like dispatches. But tell me a story is the key to everything. Tell me a story. And that's exactly what Oberman did last night. So I got, and I came on the air and said, wow, if you get a chance, see it on the replay. And then, of course, I got a bunch of emails where people said, no, you don't have to do that. It'll be all over, MSNBC's website, plus Keith Olbermann's own blog site and yada, 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 which was fine. So a couple emails. This is from, Vita. No, I think it's Vita. Mike, I was very relieved to hear your high praise and support for Keith's marvelous commentary. Some people today are belittling and demeaning him. I was saddened to hear some progressives who just didn't get it and felt it was more valuable to spend their time going after him than working on the other 8,937 issues that are destroying the planet. I thought Keith was absolutely brilliant and moving and touching. His show left me ready to take more action than I ever have on supporting Congress to pass this ridiculously necessary legislation. And I will support the free clinics he talked about. Thank you for being willing to be touched and inspired, as always, by truth. Your most ardent atheist, animal activist, vegan fan, Vita. And this came from Marshall. Mike, just wanted to say what Keith Olbermann did yesterday was American journalism at its finest on his countdown program. I was a truck driver for Old Dominion Freight Lines until my employer found out that I'd been taking Lexapro, prescribed by my doctor for anxiety attacks. I was terminated on September 3rd this year, and now my daughter and I no longer have health insurance. Thanks for listening, Marshall in Duncannon, PA. And from Gianna, I sincerely hope that you had the great opportunity to watch Special Report by Keith Olbermann last evening. If you did not, there's another opportunity to watch it. It takes a little while, but it is well worth the time, and she sent me a link. Ultimately, it's a great speech saying the things that really need to be said about this long and sad debate about health care and health insurance reform. Ultimately, we, our Congress, the insurance companies, etc., are talking about life, illness, and death in America as it relates to people's insurance coverage or not. Please do watch. It's quite poignant. Yeah, I have. Thanks, Gianna. So anyway, I get an email today then. Apparently it's a blog at Daily Kos or a diary at Daily Kos. And I'm not going to mention the talk show's name, but he says, I feel compelled to get a sense of this domain regarding her behavior today on her show. She spent the whole 3 hours tearing down last night's countdown on MSNBC devoted to a one-hour special comment by Keith Olbermann. She writes on her blog, quote, I always thought a comment was a brief observation. Evidently, I was wrong about the brief part. I'm sorry, but that was the most self-indulgent hour I've heard since Emerson, Lake, and Palmer broke up. Talking for an entire hour isn't a comment. It's a filibuster. Olbermann railed on for an hour about how we need health care reform. Keith, the best thing about stating the obvious is that you can state it pretty quickly. At least most people can. Watching that, there were a lot of things I wanted to hear Keith Olbermann say, but mostly I wanted him to hear him say, and in conclusion, and then Dan, who sent this to me, she railed on her radio show today that the one-hour commentary by Olbermann last night was elitist and unintelligible. Now, while I can understand, Dan writes, she may have missed the point, Olbermann framed the healthcare issue as life and death, and that many of us are fortunate to have our health care while many thousands die each year simply because they did not. Ms. Blank, an alleged progressive, might as well have been working for WellPoint, Cigna, or any one of the other insurance giants for all the good she did today to advance reform, Dan. And we've gotten some other comments here because a lot of people seem to feel that because this particular talk show host claims to be a progressive that she and I have some kind of a connection, which we do not. I said a long time ago, talk radio is kind of like being in Washington. If you want a friend, get a dog. Now that's stretching it. I mean, I've got some good friends in this business. The truth is that they're not broadcasters. They're people behind the scenes, or station managers, or program directors, or my business partners. When you do this, you don't come into contact that often with a lot of people in your business. Not when you're a liberal or a progressive talk show host. There aren't that many of us. Our Seattle affiliate has to have these yearly convocations just to get four or five of us together, KPTK, in Seattle. So the truth is, I just simply don't hang out with or have a lot of friends. As a matter of fact, Peter Werby in Detroit is... I probably talk to him and Nancy Skinner occasionally, although Skinner is into the business and out of the business, but just not that often. So this particular person who apparently made a complete ass of herself today in talk radio is really not a friend. I mean, we share some similar ideas. So I think that's the reason a lot of people copied me on the emails that they sent to her. And that's okay. But for future reference, you don't have to do that, because whatever this particular talk show host says is her business, and I'm not the least bit interested. There are a couple of people who present themselves as progressives who are in radio and or television, and you know my feelings about that. I think a couple of them are just extremely phony on this issue. But anyway... just wanted to share that little bit with you, too, truth seeker. All right, we have a break. Do we have a break coming? Yes, we do. We have a break coming. We've got miles to go before we sleep here, so a little bit more about the Catholic Church that you're going to love. A moment with Bob coming up, probably the bottom of the hour coming. And immediately after we return here, I have a missive from Prairie 2 that I want to share with you. What else we got? A bunch of stuff. So as we gather here at the electronic campfire tonight, stick around. No, I'm not going to mention names. You all know who I'm talking about anyway. If you don't know who I'm talking about, fine. If you do know who I'm talking about, fine. You know, at least nobody can send her an email and say, boy, Malloy was really tearing you a new body orifice. Because I might not be talking about her, right? Whatever. I frankly don't care. Stay with me. I'll be right back. No music? 10 before the hour. All right. We have a missive here from Prairie 2, our economic affairs correspondent. Prairie 2 writes, Asian central banks bought a lot of dollars on the currency markets today. You know, U.S. dollars. The intervention was seen by traders as only being intended to slow the decline of the dollar and not any line in the sand aimed at stopping its collapse. Basically, they're putting more of their own currencies into circulation, but they're not going to risk devaluing themselves too far as the dollar sinks into the morass. There are so many trillions of dollars floating around that no single foreign central bank can even consider more than band-aid measures. There have been rumors of banks buying dollars for months, but with the dollar slide picking up speed, some banks are being more open about it and hoping to build confidence. The lifeboats are very nice, and we have plenty of ice. Countries that depend on exports for survival are leading the charge to buy dollars. Hong Kong, who keeps its currency pegged to the U.S. dollar, reportedly bought $5 billion overnight. Other countries that have not been favoring the dollar are also participating. That's how bad it is. The Russians, who have been converting dollars to euros for some time, have purchased $1.5 billion yesterday. And on top of $4 billion in the past week, China, that has upwards of $2.5 trillion in currency reserves, with perhaps a trillion or more in dollars, has indicated its displeasure with moves by the Federal Reserve that they see as driving the dollar down. Some Republicans are claiming that Obama is doing this as a secret jobs program, as a weaker dollar in theory improves the sales of exports. Doing this would be extremely dangerous because the Republicans have so wrecked the U.S. economy. Any wild swings in the value of the dollar would only make things worse and threaten to collapse the dollar entirely. The Chinese, being no fools, have acquired 100 tons of gold. And other Asian countries have bolstered their own gold reserves as well. After the Revolutionary War in America, the shortage of money led to domestic trade being valued in jugs of whiskey. It worked so well that George Washington had to raise an army to end the practice. I'll give you a can of beans for a haircut. 10 cans for a podcast subscription. Prairie 2. Go to his website, prairienumeral2.com. I always feel so refreshed after one of Prairie 2's emails. Don't you? Don't you just feel like, well, that's good to hear. I'll tell you, he ought to write a book. So should Bob Alexander, for that matter. Regarding the health insurance bills, an atheist public policy organization has called for elimination of requirements in Senate legislation which would reimburse faith-based healers for their services. What? I didn't know about this. The Senate Finance Committee has taken up the America's Healthy Future Act of 2009, which has an amendment titled, quote, Religious Non-Discrimination in Healthcare. Oh, please. Oh, my God. The provision bans insurance companies from denying patients, quote, benefits for religious or spiritual healthcare, end quote. Similar legislation, the Affordable Health Choices Act, has already cleared the U.S. Senate and has a similar provision. Dr. Ed Buckner, president of American Atheists, warned that the measure amounts to a public subsidy for certain religious groups. Buckner said, quote, any adult in the legislative or executive branch of the federal government or of any state government who wants to use unproven, unscientific remedies should be free to do so. But support for such irrational nonsense violates the separation of religion and government and the canons of good sense, including faith healing or other non-medical treatment in healthcare legislation must be rejected, end quote. Now, of course, he's not talking about naturopathic medicine. Dave Silverman, communications director of American Atheists, said that Christian Science and other faith-based healers also already receive public money and that the policy is not based on good science. He said, quote, we need to spend that money on providing solid fact-based medicine, end quote. What about the studies done where? The Mayo Clinic, Johns Hopkins, where was the study done? Several times. Where it concerns praying for sick people. And the results were horrifyingly what you would expect. People who are ill and know they're being prayed for have less of a recovery rate than people who are ill and were not being prayed for by anybody, or people who were ill and were being prayed for but didn't know about it. So the more of a the more there is a connection between people praying or whatever for you if you're sick and your knowledge of that effort, the sicker you're going to become, and then you're going to die. So the best thing is to, if you are religious, if you do belong to a church, synagogue, temple, whatever, just you ought to have that, you know, kind of like a final directive or a durable power of attorney. You ought to tell your priest, rabbi, or imam, look, if I get really sick, tell the congregation, don't pray for me! Because to do so, according to the scientific evidence, would be to hasten the sick person's demise. It's in the bill? How much? You know, Kathy, this opens up all kinds of possibilities. The more I think about it, hell, keep it in there. I've been thinking about a career different from talk radio. I could become a faith healer. I mean, there's no requirements other than just declare yourself one, right? Do a little peyote so you've got some kind of experience in the, you know, in a parallel dimension, or, you know, a chance to connect with your ally, and yada, 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 and you can just hang out the electronic equivalent of a shingle and says, hey, I do faith healing. Reach out and touch your computer screen and then send me a check. Now, send me the check first, and you'll be reimbursed by the healthcare insurance garbage that's being hassled around by you-know-who. Faith healers. Faith healers are included. All right. I know. You think I'm a cynical son of a bitch, don't you? You know what? You're absolutely right. I believe in preventive medicine. And if I develop something that requires treatment that makes sense, I certainly would be like most of you. I'll do all the research I can and find the best treatment. Usually I probably wind up going overseas to get the treatment. But people praying for me, no thanks. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. Thanks for hanging around. Or if you're just tuning in, God, you missed all the money we gave away the first hour. I told you, I keep telling you, you got to be here. The Catholic Church has delivered what is being referred to as an astonishing rationalization on its predilection for pedophilia at a recent UN Human Rights Council in Geneva. The Vatican's permanent observer to the UN, Archbishop Silvano Tomasi, according to Melissa McEwen, writing at Shakesville, read a ridiculously juvenile and bigoted statement following a meeting of the Human Rights Council in Geneva. During that council, Keith Porteous Wood, representative of the International Humanist and Ethical Union, that would be atheists, asserted that the Church had breached several articles of the Convention, the UN Convention, on the Rights of the Child, by continuing to cover up sexual abuse of children. The statement by the Archbishop petulantly complained that other religions had problems with sex abuse, too. The Protestant churches and Jewish communities' problems were worse than the Catholic Church's problem. Can you believe that? I'm sure that's a lie, but it's irrelevant. That only 1.5 to 5% of Catholic clergy were involved in sex abuse. Okay, well, even if that's true, there are about 1.5 million Catholic clergy worldwide, and 1.5% of that is still about 22,500 sex predators. And then the Archbishop, Silvano Tomasi, let loose the unmitigated bigotry against gay men in a defiant and provocative statement issued following a meeting of the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva. The Holy See said the majority of Catholic clergy who committed such acts were not pedophiles, but homosexuals. attracted to sex with adolescent males. The statement said that rather than pedophilia, it would be more correct to speak of ephebophilia, a homosexual attraction to adolescent males. I never saw that word before. The statement said, of all the priests involved in the abuse, 80-90% belong to this sexual orientation minority, which is sexually engaged with adolescent boys between the ages of 11 and 17. Okay, first of all, ephebophilia is not specific to people with same-sex attraction. Archbishop Tomasi's implication that it's a uniquely homosexual attraction is patently false. And the Catholic Church has been trying to blame its sex abuse problems on gay men since all this first started to surface in order to avoid its own responsibility for ordaining and then protecting pedophiles. And all that has been, that attempt to say, well, it's queers, has been so debunked publicly and resoundingly that the Church of Rome just can't scream homo priests anymore. So here's the new spin. Gay ephebophiliacs, which not only allows them to do an end run around accountability for ordaining pedophiles, but also conveniently allows them to do an end run around accountability for engaging in the vicious homophobia of gay blaming for the sex abuse scandal for two decades. The Catholic Church has a problem with priests who rape children. That's a fact, which is not changed by what name it's called. And as Melissa McEwen writes, and at this point, the last thing any thinking person with a conscience wants to hear from the Vatican is a bunch of BS technicalities about being substituted for any serious acceptance of accountability. But as usual, that's all we're going to get. Okay, now, as a follow-up to that, that was at alternate.org, by the way, blogged by Melissa McEwen, who writes at Shakespeare's Sister. blogspot.com, Shakespeare's Sister. blogspot.com. Then there's this. From Canada, a former Roman Catholic bishop has been charged with possessing child pornography. He turned himself in a day after police issued a nationwide arrest warrant for him. Bishop Raymond Leahy, 69 years old, ignored questions from reporters as he arrived at an Ottawa police station with his lawyer. He was later released on bail. Last August, Bishop Leahy managed a multi-million dollar settlement over child abuse accusations against priests of the Nova Scotia diocese that go back to the 1950s. On behalf of the Roman Catholic Church, at the time, he apologized, saying that he hoped, quote, to never again have to deal with such reprehensible behavior, end quote. Before news of the charges against him became public last Saturday, Leahy resigned his position as bishop of Antigonish in Nova Scotia, saying he wanted to take some much-needed time for personal renewal. Thank you. Goodbye. Child pornography. I don't like religion, you know what I'm saying? I really do not. Organization Feminists for Choice, as in choosing an abortion if one wants one. I do wish that those in favor of a woman's right to privacy would drop the word choice and say feminists for privacy. Or just get rid of the word choice. It's a semantic thing. I'm not, you know, trying to tell someone else how to handle their efforts at individual rights and privacy, but you know, that word has become so electrified. Why not feminists for privacy? Why not being pro-privacy rather than pro-choice? Because this whole issue has been so changed by the right-wing freaks and the people who want to interfere for a very specific agenda in the rights of a woman to make private decisions regarding her own body that the word choice has been just denigrated. Just completely trashed to the point where the people who want to control women will say, well, see, it's a choice between a live child and a dead child. And Why let other people, when you are making a point about human rights or individual rights and responsibilities within a framework of justice, why let the bastards who don't want justice, who don't want a woman making decisions for herself, why let them frame the discussion and the terminology? Why do that? Now, I'm not saying that they came up with the word choice. I'm sure that the early advocates for abortion rights came up with that term, freedom of choice. You know, a woman's right to choose. You hear politicians say, well, I support a woman's right to choose. What the hell is that about? A woman's right to choose what? Whether or not to have linguine or lasagna for supper? The right to choose what? Why not be direct? A woman's right to privacy. Kiss my ass if you don't like it. How about that? Seriously. A woman's right to privacy. And there you go. And in the privacy of a woman's right to privacy, she and her physician and her whatever counsel she gets, and hopefully the male, or if he's, you know, if it wasn't, from a sperm bank or something, but the person involved in creating the pregnancy, well, also, you know, they'll sit down and have a discussion. Okay, what do you want to do? And if the woman chooses not even to do that, okay, it's her body. So why not call it a woman's right to privacy? But I digress. Feminists for Choice has put out some information. There's a new Oklahoma law. Yes, it's a law. It's not proposed legislation or some kind of sick joke. It's a law set to go into effect November 1st that will collect detailed data about each abortion performed and post it all on a public website called shameonyouwhore.com. I'll be right back with more of this. Portion of the Mike Malloy program is brought to you by It's Up to Us Alone, featuring Ed Asner. Go to usalone.com for information on where to hear the debut of this dramatic new radio play in your area. 22 past the hour. Oklahoma law, it goes into effect November 1st, will collect detailed data about each abortion performed, posted on a public website. Called shameonyouwhore.com. When I go to shameonyouwhore.com, I'm redirected to a website that talks about this, so you can check it out yourself. Whether or not the law survives a current lawsuit, experts say, anyone tracking anti-abortion legal strategy nationwide needs to keep a watchful eye on Oklahoma. According to proponents of this law, this extensive data, which will include the reason the procedure was sought, will help health officials prevent future abortions. Also, doctors failing to provide this information would face criminal sanctions and loss of their medical license. Do you hear that? The law's supporters claim that, oh, we just want this information to be made public so it can be used for, you know, academic research. The Center for Reproductive Rights has now joined forces with former State Representative Wanda Jo Stapleton, a Democrat from Oklahoma City, and Shawnee, Oklahoma resident Laura Joyce Davis to prevent the law from going into effect. They filed a lawsuit claiming that the law, quote, covers more than one subject, end quote, and thus violates the Oklahoma Constitution. That's how it has to be attacked. There was a recent law here in Georgia that was attacked on the same basis, that it violates the Constitution in that it tries to amend several laws. Well, Sheila has sent me the a little more information. Implementing this measure, putting the scarlet letter, the woman who was murdered by her husband and then he committed suicide, the woman who carried a gun to a soccer game, she said that she felt like she was branded with the scarlet letter because she lost her permit to carry her Glock 26. That was just a figure of speech. This is real. Implementing the measure will cost $281,000 the first year, and $250,000 for each subsequent year. Here are the first eight questions that women will have to reveal. This is a woman who seeks the privacy of a consultation and a procedure with her physician. We'll have to answer these questions. The date of the abortion. The county in which the abortion was performed. The age of the mother. The marital status of the mother. Married, divorced, separated, widowed, never married. The race of the mother. The years of education of the mother, the state or foreign country of residence of the mother, the total number of previous pregnancies of the mother, including live births, miscarriages, and abortions. Carrie Parks, director of external affairs at Planned Parenthood of Central Oklahoma, said they're just trying to frighten women out of having abortions. Well, I think it's more than that. I think what it is a further example of the absolute necessity of religious freaks, male religious freaks, to control their women. You never hear, do you, of atheists or humanists attempting to do this kind of madness, do you? This is all religion-based, and you know it is. You know it is. It's nobody's business. What would happen if any man who decides that, well, I don't want to take the risk of getting someone pregnant again, so I'm going to have a vasectomy, and all the information was published on a website? Oh, you are ready to say, Mike, that's different. No, don't forget, every sperm, every single little tiny wiggly sperm is a potential human being. So how many human beings is that bastard man killing? Plus, he's giving himself prostate cancer, but that's just one of the side benefits of a vasectomy, right? What about a man who discovers he has testicular cancer and he has to have a testicolectomy or whatever the hell it's called? What about all the little babies packed in there? Oh, God, let's put his name up on a website. Oh, but Mike, that's cancer. Doesn't matter. Some of the laws about abortion do not recognize the life of the mother as being a reason for an abortion. You see the craziness? But you're not going to find any sort of law that publicly identifies or asks a bunch of questions to somebody who has a vasectomy, or somebody has a testicle removed, or yada yada. Come on. I don't have to educate you. You know what I'm talking about. Crisis has been going on for how many years now? 40, 50? It's not an issue. The Supreme Court never said abortions are legal. What they said was a woman's right to privacy is a constitutional right. So, Feminists for Choice, do me a favor. Why don't you change the name to Feminists for Privacy? Oh, never mind.
They'll take you as soon as you're warm. You don't have to be a six-footer. Have to have a great brain. You don't have to have any clothes on. You're a Catholic the moment that came. Because
radio right from the left. It's More Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. You know what? I'm going to wait to the bottom of the next hour to do a moment with Bob. We have a couple of affiliates that join us at that time, and we want the widest possible audience for live radio. Some of the things we do on, what am I trying to say? Stick around. We'll do a moment with Bob next hour. Got an email here from Captain Mary in Memphis. And she writes about the latest regarding Jamie Lee Jones. Do you know who she is? Jamie Lee Jones was a 20-year-old young woman working her fourth day on the job in Baghdad for contractor Halliburton, KBR, in 2005, when she was drugged and gang-raped by seven U.S. contractors and held captive by two Kellogg Brown & Root guards in a shipping container. She is still waiting for her day in court because when she signed her employment contract with Halliburton, she lost her rights to a jury trial and instead was forced into having her claims decided through secret binding arbitration. Huh? Today, the Senate approved an amendment by a vote of 68-30. That would prohibit, quote, the Defense Department from contracting with companies that require employees to resolve sexual assault allegations and other claims through internal corporate arbitration, end quote. Okay, so it passed. The idea being that what happened to 20-year-old Jamie Lee Jones won't happen again as corporate America takes over the war-making capabilities and responsibilities of this dying nation. Oh, the vote? Guess who voted no to the amendment? The vote was 68-30. All 30 of the no votes, the votes that said, no, you know, if these bitches want to sign up and go overseas, they might get boinked a couple of times. They that should be in their employment agreement. Don't worry about it. You know, rape is rape over here, maybe. But, you know, you have some little smart ass who wants to go overseas. Okay, well, she's going into a war zone. Well, she wasn't raped by soldiers. She was raped by American Kellogg Brown & Root private contractors, according to the lawsuit. you know? But the 30 Republicans who voted, now let's just keep it the way it is. Alexander of Tennessee, Barrasso of Wyoming, Bond of Missouri, Brownback of Kansas, Bunning of Kentucky, Burr of North Carolina, Chambliss of Georgia, Coburn of Oklahoma. Isn't he a doctor? Cochran of Mississippi, Corker of Tennessee, Cornyn of Texas, Crapo of Idaho, DeMint of South Carolina. Isn't he insane? Ensign of Nevada. Isn't he a serial adulterer? Enzi of Wyoming, Graham of South Carolina, Gregg of New Hampshire, Inhofe of Oklahoma. Isn't he insane? Isaacson of Georgia, Johans of Nebraska, Kyle of Arizona. Isn't he? Oh, never mind. McCain of Arizona, McConnell of Kentucky, Risch of Idaho, Roberts of Kansas, Sessions of Alabama, Shelby of Alabama, Thune of South Dakota, Bitter of Louisiana, and Wicker of Mississippi. Every one of those Republicans voted to allow women to be raped in a war zone where they are. Well, yeah, to be raped, because what they're voting for is to deny them protection of the law. That any charge of rape will be determined through internal corporate arbitration. Do you see how goddamn close we are to a complete corporatization of this country? Oh, well, Mike, that's just one little incident. No, it isn't. It's a massive incident. A woman was gang raped. And 30 Republican senators say, well, that's too bad. It can be determined inside a corporation. And what power to jail someone does a corporation have? None. So what, supposing the corporation would have found the seven contractors guilty of rape. And how do they do that? Do the seven contractors present evidence? Does the victim present evidence to whom? Is there a judge inside this goddamn filthy corporation? Are there lawyers? Is there a defense attorney? Prosecutors? How is that done? Well, it's not done like that. The way it's done is probably much in the manner of Star Chambers. You know, Jamie Lee Jones presents her case to a panel of corporate executives who listen and then ask her to leave the room. And then they decide and they call her back in and they wave in her face an employment agreement that says, well, you don't have any legal rights, Jamie. And this kind of falls into legal rights, but you signed them away. So we rule for the corporation and against you. Now, go clean the blood off your britches and stop complaining. Oh, by the way, you might want to get the next airplane home, Jamie. Jesus Christ. That's what it's come to. So the Senate has approved an amendment. Oh, yeah, well, that's wonderful. 68 to 30. Well, that's pretty good. They must have had a few Republicans vote with the majority. Yeah, they probably did. I'll bet it was Olympia Snow. I'll bet it was Susan Collins. Who else would it be, huh? 68 to 30. There are 30 Republicans, 30 members of the United States Senate who are willing to turn over to private contractors the right to decide whether or not 7 men charged with rape, 2 men charged with holding the woman hostage, should be prosecuted or not. No grand jury, no courtroom hearing, no prosecuting attorney, corporate America. Huh? What do you think? What do you think? We'll file that one in the Oval File. This is from Eric in Greenville, Texas. Mike, I've tried to call on your show many times and never get through. Here's what I have to say. I'm tired, Mike. I'm tired of fighting. Every day's like a struggle. It's like going to war with an enemy that wants us to die a slow, painful death as long as our corpses don't impede their progress. We work our asses off every day so they can have a decent life while I am locked in a daily juggling act of paychecks and balance transfers just to cover basic expenses. We ask them for a little piece of their pie and they just give us the same old, well, the economy and things will pick up soon, or worse. Trust in God, he'll provide for you. Expletive deleted. When did these bastards get the word that they had free rein to screw the American worker? When did we become so disposable? When did they decide that wages would freeze? What dropped the trousers for the corporate conservatives raping the American economy? 9/11. Yeah, it's been going on for ages, but that was the final blow to the American working middle class. Things have never been the same. It allowed them to operate behind this wall of bad economy and get their ducks lined up just right. The shedding of jobs was suddenly justified, and workers ever since have been suckered into everything from working for free, working less hours, even voluntarily cutting their own wages to allow a company to stay afloat. Idiots. That scaling back of the working class will never be regained. When they get employees to voluntarily sacrifice their own livelihoods in the name of doing the right thing for their fellow workers, that's pretty much the end of the game for us. We're screwed. The worst part is that nobody cares to fix it. They just accept it. That's the sad part. I haven't even mentioned my intense hatred for conservatives. I don't think your show is long enough to get into that. Eric Greenville, Texas. We are pissed off tonight, aren't we? We are pissed off tonight. The phone number here is 877-996-2556. Bob is in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how are you? This is not going to be a moment with Bob, but keep up the good work, man. You are just fabulous. I it really shows that everything is not okay in Oklahoma, for starters.
Oh, yeah, the website where they're going to publish. Now, it's not going to be, you know, you dirty whore website. It's going to be the Department of Health, state of Oklahoma.
Why, of course.
But, my God, what are they going to do? Supposing there's a good Christian family and their 13-year-old daughter gets pregnant by her 15-year-old boyfriend, and the family decides, no. You know, she's only 3 weeks pregnant. Let's get this done. And that good Christian family is going to have the name of their daughter put out on a website with all this private information. Oh, my God.
Yeah. They're something else. They really are.
Hold on a second, Bob. Yeah. I got a break. Hold on. I'll come right back to you. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. According to Ron in Briarwood, New York, the amendment regarding the Halliburton rape case, it was introduced by Al Franken. It was the first piece of legislation that he has introduced. Good for him. Ron writes. Thanks, Ron. Okay, back to Bob in Portland.
It's a nice piece of work that Al did.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
It really is. I had a conversation with a guy today in a library. Lifelong Republican, told me how he finally wised up and voted for Barack and how he lost his friends and so on. He said, but I know I did the right thing. And I said, well, listen, when you go home tonight, there's a guy on the radio by the name of Mike Malloy from 8 to 11, 6:20 a.m. Turn him on, see what you think. I gave him my phone number. I said, give me a call.
Yeah.
Let me know. Well, I wonder what the call will be like.
there's no telling.
Yeah.
It probably wasn't a good idea to give out your phone number, but
That's okay.
Well, thanks. I mean, thanks for for passing the word on that. That's about the best way to get people to find this program. God knows we don't have a budget to put up great big billboards all over metropolitan areas, but
you do a fabulous job of bringing things up. I listen to you every night now. I used to, when I'd go to pick my wife up the nights she worked, I'd turn you on.
Huh.
And now I turn the radio on every night at 8:06, well, ready to go.
Well, thanks a lot, Bob.
Fired up.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Keep up the good work, Mike.
All right, sir. Take care. I appreciate that. Chris is in Franklin, Tennessee. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Mike, it's fantastic talking to you. I'm a longtime listener.
Thank you.
First-time caller. One first statement I'd like to make is I can't believe that there are people in Oklahoma, number one, who are having premarital sex, God forbid, and that are seeking out abortions, which you and I both live in the South, so we're kind of throwing stones. You know, we both understand what it's like to live in knuckle-dragging mouth breathers. So.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, my comment was that the law that they're trying to pass in Oklahoma is a violation of the HIPAA Act. It's the Health Insurance and Portability.
Oh, that's right.
of 1996.
That's right. Well, now, let me...
It's a violation. They can't do that.
Yeah, I agree. But let me make one thing clear. It's already a law. They're not trying to pass it, Chris. It's already a law. It goes into effect November 1st this year. Now, there are a couple of people who have filed a lawsuit to stop it, but it's already been passed by the Oklahoma legislature, and it becomes law November 1st.
I'm trying to understand how that supersedes federal law.
Now that you bring it up, the HIPAA Act, where, you know, my God, you can't call. I can't call Kathy.
About your wife.
Yeah, no, I can't. I literally can't. Even though
without expressed written permission by her, you can't find out anything.
That's right. That's right. So they're going to put this medical information out for anybody and everybody to play with.
Well, hopefully they'll see some of their ministers and some of their community leaders.
Well, it doesn't say anything about the name of the man that might have been involved in this. Although you're right, if they put out the name of somebody, some of those women who have been so violated this way will be women who are maybe they'll
prominent.
Be like 13 years old. Some of them might be married to prominent Oklahomans. This is madness.
It's absolute madness. But Mike, I just wanted to tell you, I don't want to take any more of your time. When I hear you speak, it's like my thoughts are coming out of your mouth. It's like you're channeling me, and I really appreciate it. And keep up the fight.
Well, I probably am. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Appreciate you checking in. Yeah, I channel Chris. Chris, you know. I'm happy to do that for Chris. Chris and I knew each other in a different dimension. So it's easy to channel, right? Amen and amen. Boy, he's right. When Chris says, well, you know, we live in the South, we know how crazy it can be down here. That truly is the case. That truly is the case. Madness. And some of this stuff, but I'm still trying to get over the. Oklahoma passes a law that will just rape a woman's privacy completely with this posting all this information about everyone in the state who gets an abortion. AB 30 Republicans today, or was it yesterday, voted to deny due process to women who go to work for a private contractor and go overseas and get raped. What about murder, boys? Would you deny due process in that regard? Supposing a young woman went to Iraq working for KBR and was murdered by a psychopathic male KBR employee. And the family wanted to have the prosecutor back home charge that killer with murder. I bet you these 30 goddamn filthy Republicans would have voted against that too. Corporate America first. Corporate power first. Last. Always. That's what they're about. Corporate power. First Amendment, Second Amendment, Third Amendment, Fourth, Fifth, Sixth, Seventh, Eighth, Ninth, Tenth, all the way up. Screw that. Well, not the Second. let's not mess with the Second Amendment. We can't even trust the corporations for that. But the insanity, the sickening insanity of those 30 Republicans in the United States Senate. Remember when the Senate used to be a deliberative body that was had some honor? Hell, I'm so old, I remember when the Republican Party had some honor. 30 Republican senators voted to deny a woman raped with due process. Oh, my God. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Coming up in about 30 minutes. Moment with Bob. Right now, Elaine is in Helsinki, Finland, listening online. Hey, Elaine.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. Of course, I would expect nothing but the most unconscionable votes from Republicans.
Well, that one pretty much is the crowning example of their insanity and their contempt for the American worker, much less the American woman.
That's right, Mike. I mean, there's over 500 votes that they've taken over the years, just like it.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's obviously it's not the reason why I called. I thought that Keith Olbermann's special comment was the finest hour of TV news I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was worthy of a Mike Malloy show. I thought he really channeled you in that whole special comment. And I watched it three times. I was really blown away, and I don't see how anyone could not be moved by what he had said.
No, I don't either. That's why I'm surprised. I would expect right wingers, Bill O'Reilly or somebody, to immediately try to slice and dice what Olbermann is saying, because Olbermann is he's unique in American broadcast journalism right now. There are people equally unique in their own way, John Stewart and a few other people, but. But Olbermann, you know, let's remember, Olbermann is not on the Comedy Channel. He is on MSNBC, which is owned by NBC and Microsoft, which is owned in turn by General Electric. So Olbermann is so against the grain of what we normally get from corporate news as to truly make him unique. And to have a so-called progressive talk show host here in the States attack him and display her own, her own toxic narcissism. It just adds to the shocking, truth about the lack of real liberals or progressives on the air.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised. I don't know if people have rallied to his cause on the media. I can't tell that from over here, but I don't even know if there's been any criticism, you know, on the right of what he has said.
Yeah, I don't either, because I refuse to take myself into septic tanks that are these right-wing websites. A lot of people will send me garbage that appears in these godforsaken crap holes, but you know, I don't go there voluntarily. I just can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, I just want people to remember, you know, I mean, you know, I call because I care, and living over here, you know, we have health care, we have single payer system, even when I go see a private doctor and I pay for it, the government does pick up a portion of the bill. And it really, as Olbermann said so incredibly well, it doesn't have to be this hard.
Right.
You know, if we want it, you know, we can have it, but we have to demand it. It's just so important. I mean, I watched it three times yesterday, and if anybody out there doesn't really get it, they should watch it over and over again until, you know, it sears into their brain.
Yeah, and what is astonishing to me is that this is not a discussion about invading another country. This is not a discussion about tax breaks for the wealthy. We don't have discussions about that. This is a frontal assault by corporate America and their right-wing pigs to stop something as essential as health care availability for citizens of this country. When you really peel away all other aspects of this and get down to that truth, that reality, that an effort is afoot to reform healthcare, insurance, and the way healthcare is delivered in this country, and there is and it will benefit the entire country. The idea would benefit, and the idea has been so chopped up now by corporate America, by the right wingers, and that includes Democrats as well as Republicans, to the point where whatever passes out of Congress is going to be probably is just going to be a joke. And what are we talking about here? We're talking about making health care affordable. Jesus, God. I mean, this is a madhouse. This is a madhouse over here, Elaine. It's a madhouse. Yeah. This is just an absolute insane dumping point for the galaxy. Every nutcase in every universe that has human life gets dumped here.
You know, and it's incredible in such a dynamic country where there are lots of intelligent people that
Elaine, you're disappearing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There you go.
The internet.
Okay, now you're back.
Okay. Must be the internet. Must be the government or the corporations don't like what I'm saying. So.
Or sunspots.
Yeah. But anyway, Mike, keep fighting the good fight, and everyone out there, look.
There you go again, pal. Try that one more time.
Okay, I just wanted to say, finally, just to everybody out there, it really doesn't have to be. Just admit it.
Yeah, I think what you're saying, and it's really starting to disappear, Elaine, is it doesn't have to be this difficult. What we're talking about is health care, the way health care is delivered, insurance reform. Thanks, Elaine. I appreciate what you had to say. I've never heard that before on his phone call. That is weird. Kate T. has sent me something here. Mike, my heart goes out to the woman abused by her coworkers at KBR. This arbitration business has been going on for at least a couple of decades. Back in the 1990s, I had the, quote, opportunity, end quote, to work for a large defense contractor. I initially got the employment through a temporary agency. After a couple of months, they wanted to hire me permanently, so I went through all the clearance stuff and was about to sign on with them when they said, oh, I guess you need to fill out this application. I couldn't believe what I was looking at. It was 6 pages long, 2 pages of personal information, and 4 pages of waivers of my civil rights, Title VII, EEOC, etc., 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 and agreeing to arbitration in the event of a dispute. I took it back to the human resources representative and told her I had no intention of signing this and that I thought it was illegal. She couldn't believe I was turning it down. Eventually, I was taken to the head of the whole project, who was also incredulous that I would turn down a $40 per hour job for such a, quote, silly issue, end quote. I told him, quote, people died for those civil rights, and I'm not signing them away, and you should all be ashamed of yourselves for asking anyone to do so. I don't care if your job pays $100 an hour. I won't work for traitors, end quote. And I left the premises after turning in my badges. I can't believe anyone that read the application would sign it. I still have the application agreement tucked away somewhere. I contacted the temporary agency and the state labor board and was told that they could have any employment agreement they wanted. It was between the employer and employee. I still find it abhorrent that this is even allowed. If it isn't illegal, it should be, and I'm glad they are finally doing something about it. Kate T. Well, the only thing they're doing about it is they're not nullifying it, and I'm not trying to tell you something you don't know, Kate. Yes, they are trying to do something about it, but they are not doing the essential thing, which is to make these agreements totally illegal, not just for corporations that do business overseas, for the United States government. It's astonishing to me. I had no idea this stuff. I didn't know this. I didn't know this until the Jamie Lee case came up, and I remember hearing about it when it first came up somewhere. Somebody sent me an email or something, because I damn sure didn't hear about it in mainstream media. And then what Cap Mary sent tonight, I'd not heard of this. I had no idea. And then what you just sent. Back in the 90s, you were I don't know. I sometimes think I've been living in some kind of a bubble, and I had missed all of this vicious corporate destruction. Well, I guess not.
outrage. Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
Yeah, 21 past the hour. Right after the next break, we're going to have a moment from Bob, so stick around. Debbie is in Brighton, Michigan. Hey, Debbie.
Hi, how are you this evening?
Pretty good. How are you?
Just fine. You know, I was listening to you on the vote that was taken yesterday on the sexual assault that occurred to the young lady overseas.
Yeah.
And I was paying close attention to that because that's a topic that's very close and dear to my heart. And I was looking at it because it was more reflective of what's going on in our society as a whole. I know that it you know, that particular bill had to do with an arbitration issue.
Right.
But it also is reflective of the general overall view that's widespread in America right now on sexual assault of not only women but children.
Mm-hmm.
And in America, you know, we feel that we have laws and statutes and programs and protections for our sexual assault victims. But the reality is very few are able to make it to court.
Yeah.
And in my own family, we experienced this with some of my children. And we had one harmed by and I live in a family-valued Republican community, and I will say some Republicans came in from out of state and were very upset about what happened here in this area.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certainly an element in the party that do systematically cover up these assaults. These people were so brazen. They called my home for 5 hours every 10 minutes bragging about harming this child.
Oh, my God.
But and I hope these people are removed from political office and every other office they hold. So I try to work towards that.
Mm-hmm.
That element is there. But what is happening in our own country, there is a callousness towards poor sexual conduct. And our victims here are getting battered so that statutes of limitations run out. And you find it, I do a little work with SNAP and clergy abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they find with their victims, that their victims get so battered. And it's systematically done, intentionally done, so that statutes run out. And then they have no recourse in our courts.
Right.
So things have gotten very sophisticated in how to handle and what to do to a victim. So I did watch closely as to who gave yays and who gave nays yesterday, and
mm-hmm.
You know, whether they caved in for the influence of the private contractors, or you know, they only know what was in their heart when they cast that vote. But I think it is reflective of an overall callousness that we're seeing in America on some of our assault victims. And like I said, it's something I certainly have been up against for years. And you can certainly hit very influential and powerful groups of people.
Sure.
That want this suppressed. And they don't want, whether it may be just fear that they don't want the information out, or they don't want to confront the bad behaviors within their organization or within their political party. But it's something that people, I don't care if they're liberal, if they're independent, or if they're Republican, those good people in all of those political groups are going to have to band together to really combat and confront some of this horrible abuse that some people are suffering because of people trying to cover up bad conduct.
That's very true, and it's a shame that there are people in this society, in my opinion anyway, who are so willing to do that. That those people least able to defend themselves, in one instance that would be children, and who are so vulnerable to assault or predation by adults, are not defended. As a matter of fact, are deliberately not defended, made more vulnerable by right-wingers, by Republicans, by neoconservatives. They don't care. They're anti-life, Debbie. In my opinion, they're just completely anti-life. I've got to move on. Thank you, Debbie. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Anti-life, that's strictly what the Republican Party is. They are the party of death, destruction, human death, as well as death of this economy, death of human rights, destruction of mutual respect, destruction of the carefully, at one time, woven tapestry that is the social safety net in this country. They're destroyers. Republicans, and you know, I don't come to this conclusion recently. That's been obvious for decades. They are destroyers. They are the death party. They hate life.
Defining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
Goodbye, 26 before the hour. And it's time, once again, ladies and gentlemen, for a moment with Bob. Once again, a moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Tonight's subject, taking a measure of the beast. Hey, Mike, among other things recently, dead William Sapphire wrote speeches for Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew. For the most part, his politics gave me the dry heaves, but he certainly knew his way around the English language. He created the famous phrase, nattering nabobs of negativism, for one of Spiro Agnew's speeches, and ever since then I've been a sucker for alliteration, so you'll have to excuse me if I call the following a possibly penultimate moment. It all started last week when I took an online poll linked from an ad on Crooks and Liars. Since taking the poll, I've been getting a daily newsletter from the website's author who describes himself as, quote, an ultra-conservative American who has been writing a newsletter for 39 years, end quote. I knew right from the start that the poll was skewed all to hell, but what the hell? Let's see how 607,946 Americans responded. The poll consisted of five questions, and the first one was a doozy. Who is most to blame for America's current economic crisis? There were seven choices. Investors, homebuyers, real estate and mortgage professionals, Wall Street, banks and subprime lenders, the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, and the Democrats in Congress. I picked the Bush administration because we got whacked a minimum of $10 trillion on their watch. The Bush regime started two wars and then put them on our credit card. Linda Bilmes and Joseph Stiglitz summed it up in March of 2008 when they wrote in the Washington Post, quote, you can't spend $3 trillion, yes, $3 trillion, on a failed war abroad and not feel the pain at home, end quote. I'll throw in the subprime mortgage meltdown, the unholy collusion of banks, subprime lenders, Wall Street, and the federal regulators in the Bush administration that blocked attempts by state governments to prevent predatory lending practices. According to Wikipedia, by November 2008, the U.S. federal government's efforts to support the global financial system resulted in financial commitments totaling $7 trillion. Our phony baloney economy blew its wheels, and nobody knows ultimately how much that train wreck will eventually cost. It certainly got my attention when it was described as, quote, the largest transfer of wealth in human history, end quote. So, yeah, I figured the Bush administration was mostly to blame for America's current economic crisis, where, according to Michael Moore, a home goes into foreclosure every 7 seconds. But factor in the answers from the other 607,945 Americans who took the poll. 66% said that the Clinton administration and the Democrats in Congress were to blame. Only 12% picked the Bush administration. The poll results reminded me of that crappy two-part docudrama ABC aired 3 years ago. Remember, The Path to 9/11. It was billed as based on the 9/11 Commission report. And blame the Clinton administration for 9/11. Forget about the scores of warnings the Bush administration received from intelligence agencies from around the globe. Forget about that August 6, 2001 memo, Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S. And forget that after being briefed by a CIA officer on the memo, Bush said, all right, you've covered your ass now. Bush continued vacationing in Texas after receiving the memo and cleared some brush around the ranch. And there isn't any record of him doing squat about Bin Laden. But according to ABC, the terrorist attacks on September 11th were because of the failures of Bill Clinton. So I guess it stands to reason that our economic meltdown was his fault, too. If you're stupid. It's weird enough when people don't know their grandfather's history or their father's history, but when they don't even know their own history, events that happen within their own lifetime, then it gets really bad. There's so much stupid out there. Frank Schaefer, author of Crazy for God, said, quote, within our culture, we have a subculture which is literally a fifth column of insanity that is bred from birth through homeschool, Christian school, evangelical college, whatever, to reject facts as a matter of faith, end quote. I disagree with Schaefer only because he used the word subculture. It's the culture, not a subculture. Consider, 61% of Americans do not believe in evolution. 47% of Americans believe that the universe is 6 to 10,000 years old. And two-thirds of the idiots who took the same poll I took believe that the Clinton administration is to blame for our economic meltdown. Pretty big numbers for a subculture, isn't it? The comedian Ron White said, you can't fix stupid. And he's right. You can't fix stupid when deranged right-wing crazy talking points get regularly injected into mainstream media. Teabaggers, deathers, and birthers all found their way into the nightly news, and their insanity is disseminated daily by the highly paid mouthpieces of mainstream media. Not the right-wing media, mainstream media. The reason I say that is because the right-wing media is the mainstream media. Still believe there's a difference between the two? Take this simple test. How many times over the summer did the loony right-wing crazy crap make it into the news? During that same time, how many of their absolutely crazy claims were debunked by so-called mainstream media, news, anchor people? Answer? Zip. Newscasters like Brian Williams report on the shenanigans of teabagger, birther, deathers, but afterwards, they never look directly into the camera and tell their audience that the teabagger, birther, deathers are lying. That would have been editorializing. They would have been reporting the facts. During that same time, how many spokespersons from the left were on nightly news explaining the difference between healthcare reform and healthcare insurance reform? Again, zip. Rush Limbaugh can exhort his listeners to riot during the Democratic convention, but a reporter from the Seattle Times referred to Mike Malloy as incendiary. The right-wing media is the mainstream media. The insane right-wing subculture is our culture. And regardless of the results of last November's election, the right-wing is our government. Reality check. The majority of our elected representatives have always supported funding of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. The majority of our elected representatives have continually supported the ongoing war crimes in Iraq. The majority, Democrats and Republicans alike, the majority. Ugly word, isn't it? Especially when we're not it. So, instead of continually keeping a running tally of current events Instead of tracking the zany antics of a country that began with genocide and slavery and bloomed into murder's empire and hasn't veered off that course for most of its history, I've decided to concentrate on a couple of other things. For starters, how to convince people that the most effective thing they can do to effect real change is for everybody to stay home for one day. But first, we've all got to wake up. And then we've all got to wake up more and more people. The majority has to eventually wake up, or it won't work. As George Carlin said, it's called the American dream because you've got to be asleep to believe it. Regards, Bob. Another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. And then, interestingly, I get an email from a website, nationalstrike.wordpress.com, and well, my goodness. It says a few things, but then it says, enough. We need a national strike. Because of our current depression and in remembrance of the stock market crash of 1929, the date is Thursday, October 29th, for this strike. No work, no spending. Do not buy anything that day. Do not show up for work. The people in other countries take to the streets when their government and societies are corrupt. We must do this too. It's time for another revolution that will remind us of our power and remind these criminals why they need to fear us. We are the economy. We are the government. This country belongs to us. Thursday, October 29th, national strike of the American middle and working classes. Enough. Pass this on. Well, I just did. We are having economic treason committed against us. And like Bob, and like nationalstrike.wordpress.com, I'm just wondering, you know, I'm more than willing to do this. I will take that night off. When is it? Thursday, October 29th. Write it down, Kathy. That night we will do a rebroadcast of a program. Now, who else is going to do this? Write it down. Did you write it down? Thursday, October 29th. And this will be a notification to our affiliates and to XM and to Sirius and to the people who listen web streaming. Thursday, October 29th, I will not be here. There'll be a program, but it will be pre-recorded because I'm going to take the day off. I'm a member of the working class in this country. Advisor to this program has been Birch. Sharon Gordy is our military affairs correspondent. Bruce Enberg, economic affairs. Kay Petrini, education affairs. Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, program's ethics advisors. And the program's engineer is Kathy Bay, who is also the executive producer. Okay. October 29th, Thursday. I don't know who's organizing this. I really don't care because I'm not signing up to do anything or contribute any money or carry a banner or put a button on my shirt. I'm simply going to not work on that particular day. I am going to strike. Further, I will not spend anything that day. I'll not buy anything that day. I will play with my kid. Or no, she'll be in school probably. I'll pick her up from school. I'll go for a walk with Kathy and Molly. And that evening we will make some popcorn. And it may be cool enough here in the South to build a fire in the fireplace.
Well, that means we'll have to shop for our Halloween candy way in advance. I usually wait to the last minute to make sure that, you know, we don't eat it all before.
Yeah, that means we're going to.
Trick-or-treaters come.
Well, we can get it on the 30th.
Well, that'll be our Halloween show. We'll be the next
one. Oh, that's right.
That'll be Friday the 30th. And of course, Saturday is Halloween.
Yeah.
I'm afraid if we're not on Thursday, no one will listen to our fabulous Halloween show.
Well, it's just too damn bad.
Fabulous Halloween.
You know, I sit here every night, Kathy, and talk the talk. We don't work for anybody. And as far as programming is concerned, I'm sure our affiliates, and I'm also sure that XM and Sirius, and I'm also sure the people that provide the web streaming are not going to freak out if we have a rebroadcast that particular night. But I'm just declaring now 3 weeks ahead of time that that particular night, you know, unless there's some horrendous event that occurs, we are going to participate in a national strike. And it's not because of this particular website. You know, Bob Alexander's been talking about this for a long time. October 29th, though, is the perfect day. It's a perfect day because, as the email says, it is kind of in memory of or in recognition of the stock market crash of 1929. I don't know what people call what we are in right now. I guess they're calling it the Great Recession. I call it a depression. I know of too many statistics of what's going on. You know them too. You know, even mainstream media has to report this stuff. And of course, their numbers are wrong. We don't have 9.8% unemployment in this country. We have about 20% unemployment, generally speaking. In some areas like Detroit, it's approaching 40% unemployment or higher. And when you stop and consider what working class America now has in terms of wages or retirement or available health insurance, oh, I know a lot of people are still working. Sure, if the unemployment rate is 20%, and if our workforce is 150 million people, that means 120 million people are still working. So, and of the 120 million, there's probably 100 million who are getting health insurance. So, in relative terms, it's still a bloodbath. I know a lot of people who are still working, who are contributing into their 401k, if they're still that stupid, who are getting health insurance through their employer, although the benefits provided by the HMO or whatever it is, are going down the tank or into the tank. I know there's a lot of people that still go, what the hell is he talking about, man? I just made my Mercedes payment. I'm cool. Everything's all right. What? Is everybody, what? What's this? What is this program? Who is this crazy son of a bitch? What's he doing? Strike National. What? Okay. If it is blowing right past you and you are not aware of what's going on, stay asleep. And the day may come when you might have to peel the leather off your the seats of your Mercedes and try to boil it and make it tender enough so you can eat the damn thing, right? So, I don't know, man. You know, I remember when Bob Alexander told me he was going to raise some money and buy all these books, prosecution of George W. Bush for murder by Vince Bugliosi. And I thought, damn, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. And he was going to send him out to, I don't know, 2,400 county prosecutors across the United States. The book would explain to them the very simple way, if they had lost a soldier from their jurisdiction, how to prosecute George W. Bush for murder. And Bob told me later that doing it was the objective. If one prosecutor decided to follow the instruction manual and prosecute this murderous son of a bitch, all the better. But doing it, just doing it, not having to sit back and say, well, you know, what'd you do, man? Well, I bitched a lot. Okay, so October 29th, if you're listening to this program, you'll hear a rebroadcast. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.